You guys hear me
Okay.
now?
Now I can hear you, Jim.
Oh, good. Okay.
Okay, awesome. Well,
Jim,
hello,
how's
everybody.
Oh, this is so cute. We could just all talk then.
We're getting started a little late, so I want to get everything moving right along here. Everybody's time is valuable, and I really appreciate you guys taking time at your lunch hour to jump on and learn about the art of negotiation with our guest today, Tom Kraft. With that, Jim, I'm going to turn it over to you if you'd like to introduce Tom and Jim Taylor with Fidelity National Title Company will be our moderator today. I want to welcome you both and everybody here today, and let's get started.
Okay.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jennifer. Welcome everybody to our third installment of Ask the Expert. And today we have a uniquely qualified individual in Tom Kraft. Tom has over 50 years of business experience and personal consulting experience in providing comprehensive business profitability planning, income tax minimization, business startup and succession planning, personal financial planning, including investment consultation, risk management, real estate, and retirement planning. So Tom has quite a bit of experience. We're going to all benefit from that today and in our time together. And of course, afterwards, we'll circulate Tom's information for anybody who would like to have a follow-up discussion with him. So without further ado, Tom, I'm going to hand over the microphone to you as we start on our topic. Today's topic is 7 negotiation tips to profit your business. Thanks,
Thanks,
Tom.
Jim. You're very kind in your introduction. Let me just say that. And so happy to be here with everyone and a member of the chamber for many, many years. A great chamber of commerce and has great events and very busy. There's another seminar going in the basement of the Crossroads today, so you can see how busy they are. What I'm hoping to accomplish today is just give maybe a couple tips on how to perhaps negotiate when negotiation is necessary. An example, hey, you have a spouse, and hey, what are your expectations tonight, hon? Well, I'm talking about dinner, of course. Where do you want to go out for dinner? That's something that you're going to do, hopefully, at least a couple times a week. And I like to think that you want to know as best as possible your counterpart's expectations. What do they expect from you? What do they expect from getting from you? Or if they're getting selling to you, what is their expectation on that? And maybe more importantly, what are your expectations when you enter into a negotiation? I kind of think that you are extremely successful in business as a CEO, owner, manager, if you're not negotiating all the time, because it's very difficult. It's very straining. It's very difficult to organize your thoughts and what you have to do and confront someone. And a lot of times, and I'll talk about this later maybe, you resort to hiring someone else, maybe someone in your office, maybe your attorney at times, to help get your point across and try to make something, situation better. I wrote that negotiation is a process, and I have my teleprompter here. You can see my teleprompter. It's a process by which people exchange ideas with each other in order to affect a change in their relationship. Negotiating towards a win-lose conduct can sacrifice long-term relations, with someone. And I have an example of that. Win-win, negotiation, when possible, it is satisfying to both parties involved in consideration of their point of view. So when you think about negotiating, you really would like an ideal way to be able to, after your discussions talked about and agreed upon, you're able to shake hands. And if your negotiation enters into a period of time where you can't shake hands, darn it. Try to think through how you can enter back into that. Maybe you do need someone, a third party, to help with that. And a lot of times that is an attorney. When you think about it, negotiating for something every day, hey, Jim, can you get this job completed by tomorrow? Well, you just told me this morning. What are you talking about? That's part of negotiating as a manager, as a CEO. In business, the ultimate negotiation failure is litigation. And I try to address that near the end of our talk here today. And because litigation is very expensive. If you own a business, you're going to be making mistakes. Learn from them to get better. You can't help but make mistakes. I can't tell you, it would be a long seminar to say the mistakes that I've made over 50 years in business and doing different things. As a CEO though, as a business, there's no problem your business faces that can go unanswered. You can't let something go. It's great if you have someone that you empower in your business, maybe a manager, maybe just an employee that takes the reins and they solve a problem. But doggone it, if you're the owner, you can't let something go. You have to make decisions and you have to go forward. I have buying situations and selling situations. If you're in a position of strength, and there's a great example that's going on with our national government right now. Like it or not, we have a very strong negotiating, you can use different words, leader of our country. And I'm going to say that our president has been negotiating from his perception of strength. You don't like it, you do like it, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work, but that's probably one of the unbelievably good examples of negotiating and strength. But watch it. If you abuse your power, those people may meet again. And very likely, even with our government, the people that are being negotiated with, they're going to meet again. All right. It may be within the next 3.5 years. It may be beyond that, but they're going to meet again. They're going to remember. Understand the other party's needs. I think it's just incredibly important to, if you're going to buy something, let's say, and you don't know the other party, maybe you're going to do business with a business you've never dealt with, look at their website, try to find out who the leaders are, who have their customers been, have they been satisfied? So if you're dealing from a strength position, you're going to say just the opposite. I've got someone that is maybe in a weaker position, I think, you don't know for sure, but try to find that out. Some years ago, we looked to buy a piece of property. I'm just going to use some examples. And I met with the couple. They were a farm couple, very nice couple. They were represented by a real estate person. And I had a check in hand. I'm here at a table. Here's a check. Here's an offer to purchase. You told us what you wanted. We're going to offer about that amount of money. And would you be interested to sign all this? The realtor turns around and says, maybe we should think about it tonight. And so I left with the check. The next morning, my partner says, I have a piece of land we want to buy. And they were out. Now, maybe it was okay they were out, but they didn't sell the land for about 10 years. So in that case, we could just walk away. We felt we had a position of strength. We never came back to that. We bought the other property. But you'd have to be careful if you're going to be strong-willed about things. Be careful, considerate of other people. If you're weak in your position of weakness, you don't have the money, list at least the values you can bring. We realize that we're not going to be your biggest customer, but we think we can add more value as we grow together. Try to list out, be prepared for the future. Give the strong party counterpart reasons that they should be doing business with you. Another example, crazy example, buying a piece of property. Offer was, we're just going to use numbers, just pretend numbers. 450 was the number. Would you take 4.25? You know what he said? No, but we'll take 475. You say, what the? are you serious? He was serious. We paid $475, and that was it. And it's like, slap my face right in the face, Tom. But we also knew that was also a fair price, but my goodness, how dumb that was. In that case, we were the weaker party. Just know your opposite. I've come here to working. I have. Oh, you hear this? I want to sell Jim my service. And I say, have you reviewed the proposal I gave you? And you turn around and say, hey, I have someone else working to provide the services that you're looking at. You ever heard that? Oh, I got competition. Are they lying? I don't know. Sometimes it's a Zoom meeting and there's no picture, so you don't know if they're lying. I'll bet I knew who that is. Our company works with quite a few of their former customers. I don't know. What do you say? You have to say something. Try to get around that idea and go back with it. You want to buy something. The oldest seller trick in the world. Hey, I want to buy a car. I'm in the parking lot with my spouse. And we love this red car. We're with the salesman. And somebody else comes along. God, what do you want for that red car? What do you mean? What do you want? That's our car. We haven't closed it, but that's our car. Are you going to hear that? Yes. So do you shoo that competitor away? Not necessarily, but know that that's going to happen. And it's a little bit of a trick. Can you use that too? Yeah, you can use that. You can say, hey, there's somebody that I'm working with that may want to give a better offer. You see on the car shows, if you watch the car shows at all, someone drives by and they like this 64 Galaxy, whatever it is, and they stop by the house, knock on the door, and talk a little bit and say, you know, would you be thinking about selling this? You know, what's your price? What are you thinking about? And they go back and forth, and what happens? Well, if I had to sell at a party, you're looking at like $15,000. Whoa, my goodness, $15,000. Well, would you take 10? Okay, and what happens sometimes? No, or split the difference. And I know we've all done that. And it's a common way to negotiate a price for when you're trying to buy something. Should you make the first offer on something? A lot of people will say the first offer loses. You may be undercutting your price. You may be, what do I want to say? Excuse me a second. You may be negotiating against yourself, I call it. Well, what are you thinking? What are you wanting to offer? I didn't think it was so high. Maybe I can offer a little bit less than that. Timing, terms. Maybe you can throw in something. More product, more timing, future business, go to the vendor. If you're in a deadlock, you need a third party to help. Maybe you need to hire your attorney. That's it. I train for time. It's not a bourbon. Okay. Let me see what I have here. If there's any questions too, just holler up. That's okay. Protect your profit. Don't underestimate your service or your product. Try to put it in writing. Before you negotiate, try to know what your high end, what your low end is on price and timing. Okay? So be prepared for that. If you're willing to walk away from the deal, that's important too. If you're in a deadlock, walk away, like we did with the $900,000 land. If you're in business, I like to say, do some progress billing. If you're selling your product, keep in tune with whoever you're talking with, your customer. Do some progress billing so you're still in the game. To know that they're still going along with what you're selling, what you're offering, and they're happy with it. If there's any issues that come up, don't wait till the job is done. Try to address the issues ahead of time, okay? Do you know when out of the blue, through no fault of your own, you signed a contract, excuse me again, and your costs are way out of this world. Did this happen at all? COVID. I don't know if you had a business. Restaurants had it. We had it in construction. Unexpected inflation. Within 2 or 3 months, some of our costs went up like 30, 40, 50,000 on a house. What do you do with that? You just eat it. Sometimes you have to rent a contract, or do you try to protect your contract? Explain to the customer, we can't deal with this. Ask for forgiveness. Try to rewrite the contract, get back some of the money that you lost because the cost inflated so much. Maybe it's your fault or it's a systemic event being something that you can't control, like inflation happened or like COVID happened. Maybe amend your contract if you can, which we had to do, see if the customer is willing to do that. Right. It's not you guys, it's just me. Should you fire a customer? Yes. They have a bad attitude. We don't want to give you information that you need on time. A customer complains all the time. They bully your employees. Your customer always wants a better deal, less profitable deal. It's all about protecting your profit. Going into a negotiation, a contract, and actually knowing these are my limits on what I can do. And if the customer isn't willing to help you, you might have to fire them. Has anybody ever done that? Has anybody ever fired a con? Michelle, you have to fire a con customer sometime. I don't know.
It's my specialty.
Well, it's in that case too, it's good to have a contract and not just a handshake to go into and talk about the expectations on both sides of the aisle there. All right. A difficult follow-up. You send out a proposal and you don't hear from them. Your counterpart, you don't hear from them. They're ghosting you. Is it going to be a good deal in the end? Maybe not. Maybe it's not going to be a good deal. How do you protect yourself? Is there any way to do that? Stay in touch. Here's your proposal. Is it okay if I get back to you Tuesday or Wednesday morning? Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday morning? Can we talk about it? Have a good contract, including the contract terms that are understandable, that seem reasonable. But it's so difficult. I find it difficult. Maybe you guys not. I find it difficult to, if you spend time and energy to enter into a negotiation for a contract or a service, buyer or seller, and then you're ghosted, or you're afraid to make that call. Oh my goodness, they're not going to accept what I offered. Or my goodness, they're not going to accept my offer to buy something. You just have to make it. But be prepared to go high, low. What if you need, is there anything I can do to make this work better? What if the timing's improved? Okay, we'll give you a discount if you pay cash, something like that. So it goes back to trying to be as prepared as possible before entering into a contract or negotiation. Okay, we're getting there. Handling and managing emotions. Does anyone ever, have they ever gotten angry when a negotiation didn't go the way they felt? Okay, it's just me. I see. It is so hard. It's so hard when you feel you've been dissed or ghosted. And unfortunately, it shows in you. I have that situation in Tom, that you work so hard in trying to accomplish something that you feel was in the best interest of both parties. It's fair. And then they start saying all sorts of bad things and everything. Boy, you just say, just hang up the phone or don't talk to me anymore. I don't want to ever see you again. I just say, try to be as calm as possible. And that goes into presentation. Do you know your opposite, your counterpart, who you're talking with? Do you know how they've handled maybe business in the past? Is there anyone else you can talk about? if I have someone that refers business to me for anything, but it doesn't care what it is, any kind of business, I will, first thing I'll go to the media, the social media, the websites, try to find out who these people are, who's the owner, who's the decision maker. Is it possible that I would know someone that has dealt with them in the past? So I know ahead of time, okay, do I have to prepare for emotional distress with them or not? Anxiety. How do you relax yourself? This is not bourbon. This is just lemonade, okay? Know your limits. Be prepared. Be willing to walk away if things don't work out, if maybe the negotiation doesn't work out. Anger will lead to litigation. I had something happen earlier this year, contract signed, everything was fine. After 2 years, 2 years, 2 years, I'll wait to represent someone. No choice, negotiated. The third contract. There was always, there's somebody else. Okay, let's do it. They're not getting it done. Sign the contract. 3 days later, I want to terminate the contract. Tom, I didn't have lemonade. I needed something more than that. It's so difficult to just hear someone say that. So if you're good at mediation, if you're good at meditation, I should say, try to use that as best you can. And if need be, you might have to say, okay, talk to your lawyer. I'll have my lawyer. And we'll see what are the complaints? What are the things that are upsetting you, frustrating you? Why did you make your change your mind like that? Very difficult. But try to handle it. I read that three times for me because I could use that sometimes. Working with partners could be a business partner, customer, vendor. I'll say again, put it in writing to be accountable to each other. What time is my partner or you going to be giving into the business? How do you want to be paid? How are we going to allocate the profits? How much time are you going to put in? What ownership interest do you have? Are you going to be allowed? Is it okay that we each have outside business interests? So you put all that, and I have someone right now I'm helping. And their situation, they worked 3 years to develop a product, a very unique product. They being three people, they don't have a partnership agreement. Any one of them could just leave at any time and probably take the product. And so where are they at? They didn't have an agreement. Best practice, be accountable to each other. No two partners are the same. Some could be a rainmaker. Someone could be a back office person. Both are important. They both deserve money. They both deserve being treated fairly. Manage expectations. Okay. Where am I at here? customer complaints. And I apologize. I have a bad sore throat. So, Jen. And I said, should I defer this? I'm so sorry. It wasn't my fault. It was being in Pennsylvania and getting something. It's not COVID, but it's something. So I apologize.
You're doing fine.
Customer complaints, diffusing. Jim, I just got a call from John Peabody. It's urgent that he said you call him. He's your customer. What's your first thought? I lost the contract. They're mad. John Peabody is upset with our service. He's upset with our product. They're going to leave. That's it happens. You get that call and it could be nothing. Hey, are you available to golf tomorrow? Oh, thank God. Thank God. I don't know if you want me to golf, but yes, I could be available. Proactive versus reactive. And this happens, I think everybody has experience in this. How can I help you? Okay. Teach your employees, empower them to be able to help diffuse the customer complaint. If I'm saying if there's a complaint, don't tell your customer there's an 800 number, and if you go to it, they'll help you. Don't do that. And I heard this about 3 weeks ago with someone. I said, what are you talking about? 800 number? I have a hard enough time with a computer. After the service, is the product or service you provided out of warranty? Is it out of warranty? All right. I have to go through that. But that's usually not enough. They're still not happy. How do you work with it? We had someone, this was 10 years ago, build a house, beautiful hardwood floor, 1,000 square feet of hardwood floor. Unbeknownst to us, after closing, within a month, one of the spouses decided they would wash the hardwood floor with a mop and a water bucket. Well, guess what happened after about two times they did this? It looked like a tsunami. The boards looked all curved. It looked like a wrinkled face, but it was our fault. It wasn't our fault. We'll go to the vendor. We went to our supplier. They provided some assistance with it. We put money in. They put money. The customer ate or put some money in. I don't think they ever acknowledged that mopping a hardwood floor with soap and water would have caused a problem, but we helped take care of it. In that case, was it kind of successful? I guess it was kind of successful, but bring in the vendor, whoever may have provided your subcontractor, but try to deal with the customer complaint as best as you can. I guess I'm going to page on that. Another example, manage expectation. Again, job, when will the job be completed? What will the job cost? What if the job has an overrun? How do you deal with that? What is the expected result or benefit that you expect or the customer expects from what you're providing? And stay in contact. Don't wait till the job is done. Hey, the job is almost there. Jimmy's going to come over and he's going to help with this, or Karen's going to help. We got your tax information as an example, Michelle, and it looks pretty good. You know, it's okay. We'll give you a call. This is where we're at. Just stay in contact. Just don't ghost the customer. All right. Alternate dispute resolution, ADR. This is at the end. This is where you don't want to go when you're negotiating something. I don't care if it's you're buying something, selling something, providing a service, buying a service. In any way, you don't want to try to get to there. It's very expensive. In Indiana, judges want two parties to go to mediation before they visit his or her trial, her courtroom. It's almost like a law. There's a lot of mediators. A good friend is a mediator. He said he's had 1,000 mediations. What does it cost? Well, attorneys are $300 to $400 an hour. There's a cost of your lawyer to prepare for mediation, cost for your counterparts to prepare for mediation. The mediator themselves is an attorney, and they'll charge. It's, you figure, about 3 hours for about $350,000. Each party pays 50-50 on whatever the mediator has. What does the mediator do? Well, they don't solve the problem. They're not a judge or jury. The mediator there is really there to help identify the issues in dispute. Yourself, your attorney, your counterpart, their attorney. They help try to find, reduce any misunderstandings. Identify priorities, like what's really important here? What's really the most important thing? I want to terminate the contract. Well, what's really important? You know, there's an offer here. Could that help you? They want to explore some compromise. So they're somewhat expert. They should be expert in saying, you know what? I think if they did this, would you accept it? And find points of agreement or legitimate disagreement. That's what their job there. They are not there to be the judge. And whatever's discussed in the mediation can't be brought to court. So if you say, and I've been through that, maybe you guys have too. Hey, I think that I'm going to offer you $8,000 to settle this. I think it's a fair settlement. That cannot be brought to court. If your mediation ends without any compromise, then that number doesn't come up in court. It's not considered admissible into court. So I'm trying to get everybody, I could learn from everybody actually. The ideas of negotiating, hopefully there's a couple of things we're talking about in between my issue here. They can help a little bit, but open to questions, suggestions, better information, ideas and all that. Does anybody have something? I'm here trying to help.
Tom, I have a couple of questions for you. So I know it's kind of maybe seemingly insignificant, but do you find that, let's say, a setting or an environment for a negotiation or discussion, whether it's about a complaint or it's about negotiating a contract, is it best to meet people, let's say, from your experience, let's say your office, a neutral site, their office, virtually? What do you find in those kind of soft skill areas has been most effective?
I do like a togetherness. And if there's let's say, groups of people, I think it's good to sit across from your counterpart. If there's maybe five or six people on, you know, all together and sit this way and not to the side of somebody, that sounds kind of silly. But I think at times someone will want to say, let's meet at my attorney's office. That'll happen. You want to feel comfortable with that. You're not going to do this at a restaurant. You may want to do it at a clubhouse. If you belong to a club, you may want to go somewhere like that. So somewhere that's private. I don't like the idea where someone expresses their dislike or frustrations in public. In politics, it happens all the time. It shouldn't be happening that way. So I think a neutral site could be like where the mediator. When you have a mediation, you normally don't meet at either your attorney's office or your counterpart's attorney's office. You'll meet at the mediator's attorney's office for that. So there's some neutrality there. I think Zooms could work. I think it could work. I like to see someone's expression, and I like to hear their intonation. If there's anger in their voice, if there's misgivings that they're trying to be sincere about, I like to hear and see someone. Over the phone, you can somewhat sense that, I think, but it's more difficult. You just don't want your counterpart to be so upset that you have any fear for being together. I never had that, but it could happen. It could happen. In real estate, there's negotiating. You have someone showing a home, and there's safety procedures that real estate ethics and everything asks you to have in place for showings that are, let's say, after hours. You don't even want to have them that way. So the setting is, that's a great question. I think the setting is important, whatever you feel you're comfortable with. But I like to see someone. I like to hear someone, how they say something.
Yeah. Does anyone else have a question? I have another one, but I don't want to monopolize the time here we have left. So my next question for you would be this, Tom, and this has been my experience, and I'm just curious what yours has been. You know, when we're in discussions, let's say, and again, as a title, working for a title insurance company myself or some of my team members, we might be presented with a particular transaction. And usually this comes about with more complex transactions, maybe commercial type transactions or developments. Somebody reaches out to us and wants, you know, a quote, pricing, and then, you know, kind of some underwriting details on how we would proceed with the transaction. And sometimes they will throw out there in the conversation, you know, something like ask us to do something or expect us to do something that might be at or at the limits of, or even sometimes beyond our underwriting, you know, procedures, right? So there's certain things we can make business decisions on, but certain things that we have to operate within these parameters because it's good business. It protects us, it protects the clients and all the parties to the transaction. In my experience, some people, not everybody, but some people will try to use that setting and that threat of, oh, well, this other company will do this or that other company will do that to try to get you to kind of bend on things. My experience has been a lot of times they're really just kind of trying to call your bluff, and they may walk away from that conversation or that discussion only to come back and say, oh, well, we really do want to work with you. And, you know, have you experienced that as well? When you maybe let someone walk away from something because you said, hey, these are the parameters I operate within. And they kind of give you the impression they're going to go somewhere else, but then they end up coming back to you.
Yes. Yes. And all that great example. Someone will walk away from you as their service or product provider. And you agree to that because you are not interested to provide something that's out of your bounds, out of your boundary for what you're willing to do for a certain price. And then they can't find someone to satisfy what they were requesting. And so they come back. I just gave an example that 2.5 years back and forth, back and forth. I kept negotiating with myself almost. And I wish I had just said no the third time. Danny has me write something to put on in my office. Just say no. Just stop saying yes. All right, you came back. I'm willing to do it. I had somebody last week came back after December. They already settled. They got everything done they wanted to do. Well, it didn't turn out. Their contract didn't work. But what you're suggesting too, Jim, is that someone you're ready to sign things, and it's like, would you throw in free oil changes for the life of the car? You know what I'm saying? How about you know what? Take us maybe a trip or something. You know, do something like that. Some of it you could deal with, but is it something you should expect? Not really. You're not really expecting. You're there and everybody's ready to do things. And it won't be just before I sign. I think you have to stay within your ethics too. And all of us here have ethics. All of us here have ethics. All of you are involved with that. And no, it's just beyond what I'm able to do as a title company, CPA, CFP, insurance, real estate, whatever. Explain that. And Jim, to your point, a lot of people will say, well, I need to ask. I had to ask. And you say, and they're okay with it. So, okay.
Thank you. Anyone else have any questions for Tom on negotiating?
Or examples,
yeah, of situations maybe you've dealt with. You don't have to name names or companies or anything. We can always speak in very general terms, but yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
All right. Jim? Well, thanks, everybody. And I know, Jennifer, we also do afterwards circulate Tom's information to the attendees. I think that's the way we typically handle that. So anybody wants, again, a follow-up conversation or discussion with Tom on something specific, that's available to you as well.
Awesome. Jim, thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate it. You do an awesome job being our moderator. And Tom, thank you.
Sorry.
Take care of yourself.
Okay.
I just want to remind everybody, our next one will be Wednesday, August 13th. We have Carla Cohen from United Healthcare joining us, who's going to talk in detail about the exclusive insurance that's offered to chamber members. So if you're interested in that, please sign up. I'll get you out the link the week of the event again. But thank you all very, very much. I hope you found some useful information and guidance from Tom about negotiation and managing customers. But thank you all very much and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Jennifer. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.